Now into the month of December, which may mean, as if you listen to all of the pundits who are out there, that we are entering into what is historically, not guaranteed, of course, but historically, a fairly decent time of the year for the market, if you're an investor. Sometimes referred to as the Santa Claus effect, because Christmas seems to fall right in the middle of all that. They sometimes will call it the January effect. See, it's not really just December. It sort of kind of goes from November through February. So it's the things that land smack dab in the middle. And, you know, it's not that there's magical things that happen at this time of year. It's just that there are some things that are driven, in some cases, by tax planning at year end, things that you want to get done by the end of trading in, say, 2017 this year. So by the end of December, it'd be the last trading day of the year. It would be your last opportunity, probably, to engage in some sort of reasonable tax planning related to your investments. Again, a long, lengthy topic. We won't have that. We'll reserve that for another entire show. But, I mean, there are things that do happen and that involve the buying and selling of assets. And sometimes that will drive an inordinate amount of volume that will take place in the market. And volume oftentimes will drive stock prices higher, or at very least will create volatility. Have you noticed any of that? Are you aware that today, here on Monday, that the market itself, using the Dow as the market, all three indices, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, all opened sizably up, pretty highly up. Oh, average right in around 1% plus or higher. The Dow was up close to 300 points at some point there. Now, the Dow did finish in positive territory. Actually, it did close up, but only about 58 points, which falling sharply, as I mentioned, from an earlier gain of more than 300. The Senate passed its tax reform bill over the weekend. So there was some of the momentum, I guess, or emotion that goes along with whatever expectations come from that. Now, all that means is that the House has passed their version, and the Senate has now passed their version. Now, they've got to take the House version and the Senate version, which both of which are, in some cases, sizably different, and they have to go into conference. And they're going to have to figure out how to negotiate or compromise on whatever differences exist between the two bills. Because ultimately, in the end, you can only present one tax bill to the Oval Office. The president can only sign one of the bills. Now, I think it's pretty fair to say that whatever it looks like, the president at this stage of the game is going to sign it. I mean, he's so desperate for having a win, a legislative win, by the end of his first full year in the White House, that I don't really the thing could come out in Polish, and I don't think, even though I know he can't read Polish, it wouldn't matter to him. He doesn't really care what's in the bill as long as they have put it in the proper leather binder and he could put his name on it, and of course take credit for it if it offers any potential for making his administration look good. But by the way, it sounds like I'm being cynical or unfair to say that, but that's what presidents do. This is not about Trump. All presidents want successes of some sort. Now, in fairness, I mean, Donald Trump seemingly set himself up for potential failure by suggesting that, number one, these legislative battles are easy. No, he's discovered that that's not true. They're relatively simple to do. No, they're not. They're highly complicated. These are his words now. They're complicated. And number three, he didn't fully understand that all Republicans, and all Democrats for that matter, are not created equal. Within the Republican Party, battling between the factions within the Republican Party was as difficult, if not worse, or more difficult than dealing with the differences between the Democrats and the Republicans. But the volatility that you're starting to see now deals with the fact that Wall Street, in all times, good and bad, simply does not like uncertainty. And what we're looking at here now, even though there seems to be some legislative movement, we're not there yet. And you know something? We're already in the first week of December. There's not that much time left. Now, you're seeing sectors of the market doing relatively well. So what are they doing? Well, you've got all the pros out there, all the experts trying to figure out, well, if in fact the resulting tax bill, reform or tax cut bill, whatever you want to call it, who's it going to benefit? And ultimately, who's it going to hurt? And will, in fact, those people that get hurt, will they be willing to forgive the president? Because if they get hurt, as many will, some of these, the president's going to realize some of these are his base. Some of these are the people that voted him in. And he's going to have to sit back and figure out, how do I explain this? You know, when I made all these promises and the fact that we gut tax reform, yeah, but I think that they thought it would help the poor, or help the middle class, when in fact it's not really going to do that. It's going to be dubious at best. The rich will benefit from this. Corporations will benefit from this. Now, granted, the argument is that there's a trickle down to the rest of the economy. There's a trickle down to the rest of society. Well, I don't know. Despite all the rhetoric from all these politicians and all these so-called economists, we've looked at this before. You know what the definition of stupidity is, or the definition of a fool is? A fool is a person who's willing to do the same thing over and over and over again, things that have failed, and assume that they'll get a different result, even though in the past, every time you did it, it failed. So, well, that's a fool. Now, people do not like to feel foolish. The president made promises to people, and those people he made promises to do not want to feel foolish. The president's kind of going to have to juggle the idea of, well, who ultimately will win in this tax bill, and who will ultimately either lose or generate no benefit whatsoever. The people who will lose and generate very little benefit whatsoever are not going to be particularly forgiving, and the president might be surprised by who they are. But anyway, you're seeing some tech lagging out there in today's market. The financials were leading. You have to look at sectors that will benefit from potential tax reform. There's some rotation taking place on the back of that Senate vote, according to Lindsey Bell, strategist with CFRA. You know, early Saturday morning, Senate Republicans managed to pass a bill to revamp the country's tax system. The final vote was 51-49, as you might well imagine, in favor of the, you know, in favor after Republicans had to rework the bill late Thursday. Everyone who owns stock is probably happy with the tax bill right now, according to folks over at the Gulen Capital Partners. He's one managing partner there, Trip Miller. Net-net, this is probably good news for corporate America. The GOP, however, still needs to overcome future obstacles in order to, you know, for the Senate and the House to craft a joint bill, as I just mentioned, which will then be presented to the president. Republicans hope a deal will be achieved by Christmas. Well, we'll wait and see. But it's the concern about the bill, the concern about what's really in it. They didn't all get to read it, as you might well imagine. Oh, it's like 400, 500 pages. And a lot of the changes took place at the last minute. It was literally, there were elements of it written in the margins of the bill, which is really stupid. But that, hey, this is politics, huh? Remember, folks, we can only blame ourselves. We're the people that send these guys to Washington, right? But anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. This is the Money Talk program on AM 790. We're talking about, yeah, what's happened over the weekend. It is Monday, and how does it affect you and me? And yes, we'll try to prognosticate a little bit how it's going to affect us. We will see. But I will share with you, hopefully, the most reliable opinions I get over the next several trading days and weeks as we close out 2017. I'll be right back.
Sponsored by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam can also prevent muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS and Rite Aid pharmacies or TheraWorksRelief.com.
Great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Vincent Van Gogh. Track Builders is a proud 2017 sponsor of Waterfire Providence. Check out our progress on the Waterfire Art Center at artcenter.waterfire.org. Cooking is an art, but you eat it too. Marcella Hazen. Emery's Catering is a proud season sponsor of Waterfire Providence. Help to keep the fires burning by donating to Waterfire today at waterfire.org.
Hey folks, Kevin here from Bruno & Co. Auctioneers. Join us December 11th at our gallery on 63 4th Avenue in Cranston for our monthly Discovered Auction. Doors open at 2 p.m. for preview. Auction starts at 6. With over 400 lots of paintings, furniture, collectibles, and decorative arts, this is sure to be a great auction. Call 533-9980 for more information or visit us at brunoandco.com. And remember, that's 533-9980.
That's B-R-U-N-E-A-U.
It's called MediShare, and it's affordable, biblical health care. And if you're wondering, what does that mean? Well, ask the people who are already members, like the Badger family. It's a big family, by the way.
We have 7 boys, 3 girls.
We live out in the country. We homeschool.
And they thank God for MediShare, especially after one of their babies was born with spina bifida, and the total bill was about $250,000. MediShare members met the entire need and sent them cards and letters letting them know they're praying for them.
MediShare is, I mean, we love it. With myself being self-employed, owning my own business, MediShare was a great option as far as affordability. With MediShare, as far as like all of our stuff, it's always come through.
Yeah, more and more people are doing this, and you can see why. Hundreds of thousands of Christian believers sharing, and that is a beautiful thing. Find out more. Call 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
Hi, I'm Dr. Steve Pettirudi from Intellectual Medicine. It has long been known that the best way to deliver a cure is often intravenously. The Drip Bar at Intellectual Medicine has applied that principle to the delivery of life-enhancing vitamins and supplements. Your safe and gentle infusion will be administered by our expert nurses in the comfortable setting of our Drip Bar. We have infusions engineered to remove heavy metals and other toxins, boost athletic performance, enhance energy, melt away headaches, support immune function, neutralize free radicals, and even help fight illnesses like cancer and heart disease. We are the region's experts in chelation therapy and high-dose IV vitamin C. Whether battling an illness or striving to maintain your best health, let our doctors and nurses at the Drip Bar point you in the right direction. To learn more about Intellectual Medicine, listen to my show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WPRO.
Treatments offered have not been FDA approved to treat any disease state and have not been shown to cure cancer.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we are back with the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. Welcome to a brand new week here on AM 790, your home of talk and business. Started off by giving a sense of what happened over the weekend and how it's affecting markets today. For those of you who woke up this morning early and looked at maybe the futures contracts, sometimes you turn on the early financial shows and CNBC and all in there. They show you the charts up there and they say, okay, here's what your expectations could be for the opening when the market opens today up in 9:30. And they were looking at triple digits. I mean, as it turned out, the Dow went right up to, you know, went up to over 300 points. The NASDAQ and the S&P were trading well above 1%. I mean, those are big numbers. At the end of the day, both the NASDAQ and the S&P were down for the day, while the Dow, I mentioned, was up about 58 points. A lot of interesting volatility, and there's, you know, lots of different reasons why that would be the case. I think discussion, concerns, debate about the value and the appropriateness of the tax bill as it's evolving. The House already voted their version in, and now, of course, along party lines, the Republicans, and now, of course, the Senate just voted in after endless debate, even within the Senate's own caucus. Believe it or not, even though historically the Republicans have been the hawks on this, they've been really concerned about deficit hawks. They haven't. They've always said, no, don't. We will not do anything that we can't pay for. And I appreciate that. That's sort of like good financial planning. It's what you and I should do when we plan for spending and financial planning for our homes and our households. The government should do that with the household they manage, which is the United States economy. But they don't tend to follow that. They don't mind taking on outrageous amounts of debt. But as you said, the looking for the progress this week will be to see whether they can meld the two bills, the House and the Senate bill, which are both different with features that are quite different, and coming up with a consolidated bill that can actually be presented to the president for his signature will be interesting, no matter how you look at it. I mentioned earlier on that both chambers still have to reconcile those differences, such as implementing corporate tax cuts immediately or doing it in 2019. See, so they both seem to want to do the whole corporate tax thing, but the question is, what's the timing of it? Do you wait a year? Do you wait 2 years? Do you do it right away? Bank stocks did rise broadly with the S&P, the Spider Bank Exchange Traded Fund, KBE. It was up about 2.7%. Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan all rose at least 1%. U.S. stock index futures had also risen sharply before the open today. Dow futures briefly traded more than 250 points higher. The tax bill was supposed to dominate sentiment in the previous trading sessions. Markets closed lower on Friday after having been taken on a roller coaster ride. U.S. stocks finished in the red Friday after a report emerged stating that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was directed by the president, Donald Trump, to talk to the Russians. ABC News had initially reported on Friday, citing an unnamed source, that Flynn was getting ready to actually testify, that he made proposals to the Russian ambassador at Donald Trump's request during the run-up to the 2016 U.S. election. Part of the quid pro quo is what they're wondering about. You know, you're negotiating with the Russians over what? What are you going to give them in order to get the Russians' support for Donald Trump during this election? So it's kind of an odd dynamic in place, and that's the whole issue of the collusion potentially with the Russians. And as the prosecutor in this case, Investigator Mueller, is looking at pretty much everything. And as they get closer and closer to the White House, getting they've talked to about 20 people that have some direct relationship to the president, including now they'll be talking to Jared Kushner. They've already spoken to him. They can probably bring him back in again, and I believe also Donald Jr. and others. The media outlet went on to correct, by the way. The report stating that Flynn would likely say that Trump's instructions had occurred after the election took place. We'll see. Now, in corporate news, CVS said that it will buy Aetna, that's the U.S. health insurer, for about $69 billion. That agreement is seen as one of the 2017's biggest deals so far in the merger and acquisition space. CVS shares actually slipped 3.4%, while Aetna's rose 1.7%. Why? Because CVS is the buyer, Aetna is the seller. And, of course, Aetna's shares will push higher as part of the negotiation for that sales price took place. So in the end, CVS wouldn't have made the deal unless it allowed them to be accretive to profitable earnings down the road and allow them to be more effective in a given area of the health insurance marketplace, the health care and marketplace. But initially up front, it does cost CVS something. Now, the Wall Street Journal also reported that a deal by Disney to buy some of 21st Century Fox assets is gaining some momentum out there. There's some speculation, the conversation between the two parties had cooled off a little bit. Disney shares did rise 5.6%. Fox has gained about 4%. Now, in the commodities arena, oil cartel OPEC and non-OPEC producing nation Russia apparently agreed to limit their production output through the end of next year. That was a big concern earlier on, whether Russia would cooperate with that sort of a deal. By limiting their output, they could keep the price of oil higher than what it has been, and they want to get it, obviously, keep it above $60 a barrel if they can. Oil prices rose on the back of that news last week. Prices are trading in the red Monday, of course, on news that U.S. shale drillers had added more rigs in the previous week. So, again, more potential production coming online. And the European stocks traded higher today, while markets in Asia finished relatively mixed to slightly lower as investors eyed trading that takes place on Wall Street. Now, remember, there was a time when Wall Street, the Asia-Pacific markets, and the Eurozone would all move in lockstep, although European markets and overseas markets are open at times because of the structure of the globe, time zone differences. The foreign markets that are open different times than the U.S. So, yes, the U.S. market will affect trading in the other markets. What's happening now, though, is that the foreign investing, what it would be international ex-U.S., in other words, outside of the U.S., international investing, is taking on a little bit more of its own complexion, shall we say, because the European economy is in a different part of the cycle than the U.S. is. The U.S. is, using a baseball analogy, somewhere in and around the seventh inning, they believe, of the nine-inning game, with still a few innings to go, which means there's still an opportunity here. No need to be rushing for the exits here at the end of 2017. But by the same token, they're suggesting that perhaps the international European markets and Asia-Pacific markets are much closer to the fifth inning, beginning of the fifth inning, in terms of where they are in the economic cycle. So we may be just slightly longer in the tooth, I guess is the phrase that you hear. And over there, there's more upside opportunity. So, yes, is there opportunity to make money in the U.S. market? Yeah, probably. Many people feel that although the low-hanging fruit has been picked, that there's certainly going to be individual opportunities to watch, look for carefully. But they do feel that there's more open opportunity. The price-to-earnings of the U.S. market, the P.E. ratio is up in the 24 range, which is not outrageously high if you realize that it was close to 60 or higher in the beginning of the year 2000 after the bull market of the 90s, the dot-com bubble. The last big bubble was in that cycle. Yeah, so when you're looking at the P.E. of about price-to-earnings ratio of 60, and some of the tech stocks on the NASDAQ were in the hundreds, where the long-term average for the U.S. S&P 500 is typically more in the 17 range or so. Well, yeah, 24 is higher than 17 or 18, but it's not extraordinarily high. But we're looking at P.E. ratios overseas in the European and the Asian markets that are right down in that 15 range, 14, 15 range. So, yeah, I guess the international markets are not that they're cheap specifically. There's always some values that are great and some that are not. You got to talk to your financial advisor about this stuff. I'm trying to give you the kind of questions you should be asking your professional advisor if you're working with one. Or if you're trying to do this on your own, if you're working on an online trading platform and you do this stuff, I want you to know what kind of questions you should be Googling. What kind of research should you be doing about these markets? I'm suggesting now that a great many analysts I'm talking to, some of the conferences I've been to, some of the people who have been reasonably dependable in terms of their advice, they're suggesting is that the U.S. market, although you should still have some money in the U.S. market, there's still upside, that it is going to be a little bit less advantageous in 2018. They're not looking for a real correction, maybe some pullbacks here and there, some volatility, but not a correction. They're not looking for a recession next year for all the things you talk about. However, they are saying there is a potential for some greater opportunity outside the United States, which means, yes, if you're going to own stocks in your portfolio, you have a decision to make about what percentage of your allocation should be outside the United States. I'm suggesting, yes, maybe more than it has been might be the answer. Talk to your financial professional. They'll let you know. I'm Don Sowa. We're coming into halftime here on the Money Talk program. You're listening to AM 790, your home of talking business. And Maya's here. She's out here taking calls at 437-5000. And the toll-free number is 888-345-0790. Call up, give her your question. She'll make sure I know what it is, and we'll try to answer it for you in the next segment of the show. Have a good night. I'll be right back.
This is Amy from Moriarty's Fence, the Invisible Fence brand pet safety experts. The Invisible Fence brand works for all dogs, all breeds, all ages. We start training puppies as young as 10 to 12 weeks old, and we also keep cats safe at home too. The key to our 27 years of success is our customer service and pet training support. Our installed outdoor safety solutions start as low as $7.99 and can be customized for your property. Call 800-225-0808 for a free design and pet consultation visit, or schedule online at MoriartysFence.com. At Moriarty's Fence, we work hard so you can rest easy knowing your pet is safe at home.
But it just makes sense.
And it's invisible.
It's the fence that makes sense. Get the invisible fence.
Moriarty's Fence, 800-225-0808. Keeping pets safe since 1986. Moriarty's Fence reminds you to support your local shelter, adopt, volunteer, donate.
At Kessler Foundation, we improve quality of life for people with brain and spinal cord injury, MS, stroke, and other disabling conditions. Our discoveries help people reclaim the ability to walk, drive, remember, and communicate, skills needed for greater independence. Explore how Kessler Foundation changes the lives of people with disabilities at KesslerFoundation.org. That's KesslerFoundation.org. Discoveries that change lives.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you.
If you're feeling low with nowhere to turn, call the Samaritans at 401-272-4044. It's free and confidential. 401-272-4044. This is Bill Withers. We all need somebody to lean on. When you do, the Samaritans are
there. Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
The National Guard for me was a perfect fit. I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I didn't find that in the normal day-to-day life. I didn't find that working behind a desk. I realized being hands-on and being a soldier was something that would keep me active, keep me outside, keep me in that team environment that I craved and that I needed so much. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake. I wanted to be in Boise, Idaho. I wanted to be home. The National Guard gave me the opportunity to stay right where I was, serve my country and my community, and it was the best of both worlds. I grew up flying bush planes in Alaska with my dad. I was fortunate enough to get my pilot's license. I wanted to be in helicopters. I wanted to be a crew chief. The Army National Guard gave me a chance to fly helicopters now instead of fixed-wing aircraft.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa. Exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the second part of the show. Now, what I like to do on the second part of my shows is to address questions that we have gotten from our listeners, and I always get a list of them either on our website or sometimes I come in here and one of the producers from during the course of the day will hand me an index card or piece of paper and say, oh, we got a call coming in. Somebody called in during Dave Ramsey's show. You know, they use the local number here. And they said, well, when Money Talk comes on, could you please have Don address the following question? This is one that kind of is interesting. It's it does deal with a large demographic selection of our listeners. Our clients, our listeners here on the Money Talk program, who have been listening to this show for 26 years now, have reminded me that they're not 30 years old anymore. Otherwise, they would have started listening to the show like Maya when she was four. She's always interested in money, even when she was a little kid. But one of the big questions was this issue of when do you take Social Security? Is there an optimal time, an optimal age at which to take it? There is an argument among financial planning professionals that suggests, and even Social Security will counsel you, what is the benefit of taking it after you reach full retirement age, or at very least when you reach full retirement age. For my generation as baby boomers, people who were in their 60s, they're probably going to reach full retirement age at 66. You get your statements. You could go on to socialsecurity.gov and pull up your information, and they will actually tell you exactly when your full retirement age is. They'll even tell you exactly how much money you are already intended to receive. But anyway, the vast majority of Americans do take Social Security at or before their full retirement age, interestingly enough. But there are some pretty compelling arguments why maybe you'd consider waiting. Now, granted, you have to be able to financially wait. I get it. Now, if you're in a position where you could actually delay Social Security if you wanted to, we're going to give you three reasons, at least as part of this discussion tonight, why you may actually want to consider holding off on applying for your retirement benefits. Now, one of the sites I like to use, being a member, I'm one of those motley fools, they call them, one of those foolish people. They have a number of writers within the organization. I don't do everything they say, but I love listening to their arguments on what to do, what to invest in, what not to invest in. In this case here, they came up with a great article. Matt Frankel over there is one of their does their research, and one of the writers. And he was addressing some similar questions to this, so I paraphrase some of the information off of his article. But one reason that you might want to consider or be able to hold off on taking your Social Security benefit is that you're still working. You know, to be clear, you could actually claim Social Security if you're still working. If you've already reached the full retirement age, if in my case 66, if I've reached 66, you're also exempt from what they call the earnings test. So if you're under full retirement age, well, put it this way, and you draw your Social Security benefit, there may be a little bit of a penalty if you are still working and earning over a certain level. If you are at full retirement age, there is no earning test, meaning that no matter how much you earn at your job, your retirement benefit's not going to be reduced or withheld. I like that. However, unless you need the additional money, so let's say you still have your job and you are working, And there's no compelling reason for you to, file for your Social Security retirement benefit. There are pretty solid arguments as to why you may want to consider holding off. It generally makes good financial sense to wait until you actually retire, thanks to the higher monthly benefit that you'll actually get, and the potential tax implications of collecting benefits while you still have a salary simultaneously. So, when it comes to federal taxation of Social Security benefits, so here's one part. So we'll talk about the tax side, since all the rhetoric on the radio and TV seems to be talking about taxes right now, right? The IRS uses something called your combined income rule, which is the sum of your adjusted gross income, your non-taxable interest, and half of your Social Security benefit. Depending on how much this is, up to 85% of your Social Security benefit could be taxable. Let's take a look at the two categories they always talk about, right? Single and married filing jointly. Well, if you are single, up to 50% of your Social Security benefit is taxable if your combined income from the sources I just mentioned is between $25,000 and $34,000. Now, up to 85% of your Social Security benefit is taxable if your combined income is over $34,000. Now, there's a slight advantage if you're married filing jointly. The up to 50% rule is $32,000 to $44,000. And if you earn over $44,000, you're in that potential. You have 85% of your benefit becomes taxable and is added to your adjusted gross income to calculate your tax liability. The point is that you're working and you're collecting a Social Security benefit. It's highly likely that you're going to fall into the combined income range because you get all that extra income coming in, right? Let's say you get an extra $1,500 a month or $2,000 a month coming in. That's going to be between $18,000 and $24,000 of additional potentially taxable dollars added to your salary and to your other non-taxable interest. So that could kick you above that level, above that, say if you're married, filing jointly, above that $44,000 level at that point, because you were drawing some income that you really didn't need to draw. You'll decide whether you need to draw it or not, I know. If you wait to collect Social Security until after you stop working, well, this might not be the case. You may suddenly find, yes, when you calculate your sources of income, including Social Security, you won't be dealing with a fairly substantial, maybe hopefully substantial paycheck when added to your other sources of income in retirement. Now, that's the tax side of that. Now, arguably one of the I would rather give you, positive reasons to do something. Reasons why we really like the idea that if you can wait and maybe not take your Social Security retirement benefit. How many investments are there out there today which will get you above 6% return? Can you find too many CDs out there that will do that? I mean, are there any annuity contracts, those fixed annuities that are out there that are paying that? No, it's pretty hard. It's generally impossible to achieve a high guaranteed rate of return. Yeah, and even in my world, I can rarely use the word guaranteed. In this case here, guaranteed by the full faith and credit the government provides makes it, somewhat reasonable to use the word guaranteed. But a rate of return on any investment, especially in a low interest rate environment like we're in now, you're lucky to get 1% return from savings accounts or CDs. A 10-year U.S. Treasury bond pays a historically low 2.4% right around now. However, by delaying your Social Security retirement benefit, you're actually guaranteed a certain amount of benefit increase each year. If you've already reached full retirement age, your benefit will be increased by 8% for every year that you wait. Now, you tell me where you can get 8%. Now, there'll be individual years like maybe you have in 2017 where you get a 9 or 10% or better return. But this is an anomaly, folks. I think most people who are paying attention know that. But if you put things in perspective, let's say that your full retirement age is 66, like we mentioned, and that you'd be entitled to an initial monthly benefit of $1,500 per month in today's dollars, 2017. So here's how delaying Social Security would actually permanently affect your monthly checks. So at age 66, your initial monthly check would be, in today's dollars, $1,500, right? So if you took it full retirement age, you know, it's the amount that you get listed there on the statement that you have. You wait to age 67, 1 year, it's going to increase by 8%. Now, instead of $1,500 a month, you're going to get $1,620 a month. Wait one more year at age 68, you're going to get $1,740 a month. Age 69, $1,860 a month. Age 70, $1,980 a month. That's a 32% increase over what would have been your benefit if you started taking your Social Security at 66, you know, 4 years earlier. Imagine that, going from $1,500 to almost $2,000. Now, historically, stock investments have returned slightly more, historically, more than 8% in an average year, but that's far from guaranteed, and you have to tolerate the volatility of the market. If you delay Social Security, you know the impact that it will have, and it's going to be pretty stable and not. There's a sleep at night factor here, folks. It's not going to drive you completely crazy. Another thing you might want to consider because of all of this, because of your thoughtfulness, and because of the fact that you kept working after you get to reach age 66, your spouse will get your higher benefit if you pass away. There are several strategies that spouses can use when it comes to Social Security benefits. Some of them have gone away already, but especially in both spouses, when both spouses have worked and earned enough to qualify for benefits on their own work record. One very popular strategy is for a spouse who is entitled to the higher Social Security benefit to wait as long as possible to actually claim it, while the other spouse claims at or before their own full retirement age. So if you have we've seen cases, I've seen myself, where, you know, the husband, this particular case, you know, had a Social Security benefit of about $2,400 a month, and the wife's was around $1,000 a month. Well, if he passes away prematurely, she has the opportunity to choose which benefit she's going to receive. Now, while they're both here, both alive, they're going to receive about $3,400 a month, which is fine. But when he passes away, she doesn't lose that $2,400 of income. She could choose the $2,400 versus her $1,000, so she will receive the $2,400 a month. The benefit of this is that it guarantees cash flow of at least the higher earner's benefit for life, even if they die first. Now, the rules of Social Security survivor's benefits do state that if one spouse dies, the surviving spouse is entitled to collect the entire Social Security benefit. For example, let's say, let's take a quick break. And we come back, we'll give you some specific details and also give you the other side of that. The fact, I'll give you some specifics in terms of real numbers. Also, delaying Social Security isn't right for everyone. We'll give you the circumstances under which that's the case. You're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. I'm Don Sowa, and I will be right back, so please stick around.
Sponsored by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam can also prevent muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS and Rite Aid pharmacies or TheraWorksRelief.com.
Bye-bye.
Farewell. With Journey Rewards checking from Navigant Credit Union, you can say goodbye to ATM fees. In fact, we'll refund any fees up to $25 a month. With Journey checking, you'll pay no monthly fees at all while earning one of the highest interest rates around. Stop by any Navigant Credit Union branch location or visit us online at navigantcu.org to learn more about Journey Rewards checking. Navigant Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
It's called MediShare, and it's affordable, biblical health care. And if you're wondering, what does that mean? Well, ask the people who are already members, like the Badger family. It's a big family, by the way.
We have 7 boys, 3 girls. We live out in the country. We homeschool.
And they thank God for MediShare, especially after one of their babies was born with spina bifida, and the total bill was about $250,000. MediShare members met the entire need and sent them cards and letters letting them know they're praying for them.
MediShare is, we love it. With myself being self-employed, owning my own business, MediShare was a great option as far as affordability. With MediShare, as far as like all of our stuff, it's always come through.
Yeah, more and more people are doing this, and you can see why. Hundreds of thousands of Christian believers sharing, and that is a beautiful thing. Find out more. Call 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
On Tuesday, Becky was sick. On Wednesday, she was gone.
I was there for my son's first breath and his last.
The infection spread so fast.
David got it when he was 13.
Terry was only 5.
Parents need to know.
There is something they can do.
Preteens and teens are at greater risk.
School nurses nationwide urge you to listen to the voices of meningitis. Get preteens and teens vaccinated against this rare but serious disease. To learn more, go to voicesofmeningitis.org.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the last segment of tonight's Money Talk program. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Don Sowa. There's plenty of circumstances in which, you know, people really don't have much choice about when to take Social Security. I'm deeply saddened by the number of people that I hear are receiving Social Security retirement benefits, and that's the entirety of what they live on. I like to listen to the – I know that when you hear statistics out there, they're usually talking about averages. You know, they're saying, okay, well, the average Social Security benefit in the United States for people who are currently retired and receiving a check every month is like $850 a month. But they talk about how 25% of them, that's all of the income they have to live on. But the average for people who are retiring, that Social Security benefit is, I guess, was always assumed to be approximately a third of what they would live on. Unlike in Europe, when you listen to them quote, you know, the retirement system in Germany or in France or Spain or where Italy or whatever you're talking about. Yeah, the U.S. Social Security system was, in fact, modeled after the German system. FDR, back in the 30s, literally said to his staff, he says, find me a way that we can provide some sort of a support benefit, not so much for couples, but for widows of men who had served in World War I. You know, that was really the thought process, the idea that you have, you know, young men who went off, young families that were broken apart, you know, split apart, so that the man could go to Europe and fight in the Great War, or whatever they wanted, the war to end all wars, whatever the World War I was supposed to be. And then came back to the country, but ultimately in the end, they, you know, mortality is such that, you know, they get to age roughly 65, and that's about the age at which a great many men would die. That was the age of mortality. I mean, it wasn't some random number. They didn't choose what will be full retirement age back in those early days was 65 years old. They didn't choose that because, and then say, oh yeah, and then people will live another 15 years and, you know, so they'll pass away at age 80. No, age 65 was chosen as the age at which, you know, the household would be eligible for Social Security check. That was actually chosen because that was the age of mortality for the average man. Now, the reason, so ultimately because women were living 3 to 4 years longer for a lot of different reasons, the benefit itself was for widows. It was really kind of a widow's benefit. And they realized a lot of these households, you know, the man fought for their country. And here they were all these years later. And unless they were able to put away or save an awful lot of money, they were really in trouble. There wasn't as much of a volume of home ownership back in the early days as in the generations that followed. But it was a tough position. As time went on, the system improved. It became a little bit more generous. But, you know, the model itself, which was based upon a whole series of factors, was similar to the German model, except the German model was supposed to replace most of the citizens' working income. In many cases, they were receiving, you know, 65 to 70% or more of what they worked during the last 3 years, their highest 3 years of income. Hopefully, at that point, they were no longer, they were prudent, they were not carrying debt, much in the way of debt, and they could live comfortably on what was 70%. Maybe 75% of their income. And if they'd saved any additional capital, that would enhance their lifestyle as well. In the United States, it was never the system, the Social Security retirement benefit was never considered a federal or state pension. It was, you were responsible on your own to put money away and save. There were people who were already receiving various types of pensions through their companies, although not as many as you would have thought. The unions that emerged in the decades that followed were much more responsible for the evolution of what was the defined benefit pension and maybe some profit-sharing plans that corporations were developing for the benefit of their employees. But it was in the decades that have come up here into the 21st century that we come to realize that the modeling for a viable system here in the United States that wasn't being as funded as aggressively as perhaps it should have been, certainly not as generously as it was in Europe, a plan that may provide a third of your retirement income did not assume that you'd live to be 80 or 85 or 90. Many of them assumed that people would retire at 65 and be gone by 75. Again, the age of mortality made some of the plans viable. But all of a sudden, that becomes a problem when you realize that you have an entire generation of people who are going to live well into their 80s and maybe into their 90s. And more people are living to be 100 than they would have even anticipated. So it's an interesting dynamic. That problem made it very, very difficult for corporations as well as municipalities to properly fund their what we call defined benefit pension plans, which some of you may be familiar with. When we talk about the word pension, we're not thinking of really a 401k or an IRA. We talk about a pension. That is a promise from your municipality or your employer that they will, at your retirement, provide you with a monthly income for the rest of your life. Some of those plans, some of the better ones, especially the municipal level, also had a cost of living adjustment where they would increase the amount of your benefit periodically to accommodate, you know, the cost, you know, the fact that, you know, there was inflation and things were going up in price. So the cost of living would allow you to keep, you weren't going to make more money so much, but you'd keep pace with the bills that you already had on the day that you retired. They're finding, however, though, that these plans did not really honestly anticipate that individuals would live, 20 and 30 years and receive benefits for 20 and 30 years after they actually retired. We're seeing the problem of that now. And then you factor in, you add into that the mortality problem, the fact that we are living longer than expected. The potential to outlive your money is also increased by the fact that during these decades, you also went through the crash of 87, you went through a bear market of 2001 and 2, you went through a market in 2008 where the S&P 500 as an index lost over a third of its value. The fact that there are periods during the market, maybe one out of every decade, 1 year, that's a negative year, and sometimes it's substantially negative. Now, if you are disciplined enough to invest your money properly and not get freaked out or overly motivated to get out of the market when you do go through a bad period, which goes back to why we talk so much about behavioral investing on this show and the importance of managing your behavior and managing your emotions, it's a hard thing to do. And yes, the financial advisors, I've talked to professionals in the CFP field all the time. Donna Grace, Stephen, and I are also CFP professionals. And oftentimes they'll say half the time I feel more like a psychologist than I do like a money manager or a financial planner. But it's becoming an important part of that, understanding behavior, understanding how money works, and understanding that sometimes the market almost seems like it has a behavioral personality of its own. Understanding these things is probably what makes the difference between a successful investor and the lack of success. You have to figure out who you want to be. Maybe the best way to manage your own emotions or to assist your planner or advisor in managing your plan is to start off with reasonable expectations. Don't look at the long-term average returns of the market as 8 or 9% and assume that that's realistic going forward. Realistic going forward may be much closer to 5 or 6%. If you do your planning based on that, go in with a relatively conservative set of expectations. The chances are, if the numbers work when you do your analysis when you're in your 30s and 40s and you invest money properly to accommodate the amount you'll need to generate that 5 or 6% at best in retirement, you're probably going to be much, much happier when you get there because the markets themselves, if allocated properly and managed properly, and if you behave as an investor properly, you'll get your way through retirement comfortably. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to buy a yacht or a Gulfstream jet or any of that stuff, but that's not really what an independent retirement is. Each and every one of you who are listening to this discussion probably understand that your vision of what an independent retirement requires is different than probably half a dozen people you know personally. And that's all that really matters is what you think is important, what you consider a need for discretionary income. And the definition of wealthy is different from person to person. We certainly have learned that. It's something we discuss here on the Money Talk program. We'll close out this year with some thoughts about things you need to be doing at year end. And we'll also talk about opportunities that you may have in the new year going into 2018. I'm Don Sowa. This has been Money Talk. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful evening. And tune in tomorrow. Hopefully, Donna Allon will be here with me and we'll do Get Back to Basics Money Talk here on AM 790, your home of talk and business. And by the way, what we try to do on occasion is sometimes when we use a tape here on the program, that will be because we can't, especially around the times of holidays, there are going to be a number of conflicting dates and everything around there. We try to make original tapes as often as we can, have a few in the vault, as we say, so that those tapes, you'll notice them, they don't talk about the market today, what happened at a given moment. They tend to be more generic, and they talk about conceptual planning ideas and things that would hopefully be useful to you. But we try to do as many of those as we can because we want you to have original content and learn something from every time you turn on the air and turn on the Money Talk program. And we hope you have that too. But as I said, we're closing out the year. So I hope that the discussions we have over these next few weeks will be useful to you. Tune in and encourage some of your friends who don't have a nightly show that they like to listen to on their drive time home. Tell them to tune in at 5 o'clock right here on AM 790 for Money Talk. In the meantime, you have a wonderful evening.
Hi, I'm Darla from Cintas.